never filtered, always fun.
If I walk by a room a couple times in room service and there's something there that I lay eyes on, I may take a bite.
You guys are gremlins yourself, man. You guys get on the road and you turn into different types of people.
Would you, like if your neighbor...
Oh, it's my signature move. The chicken wings left out late night and I stroll in. Saves you an order.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, we're here until 7 o'clock, as always. Mailing it in today, there's a lot of action going on out there, including the Habs and the Lightning making a big trade.
Moving and shaking.
Moving and shaking. So Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider, will join us later in the hour to break that down. Drouin's got a new contract already in Montreal, 6 years, $5.5 million per. So we got that to talk about. The Jays are off today. Mayweather McGregor coming up in late August. And the U.S. Open. You talk about moving and shaking. There's a bit too much moving and shaking on the leaderboard for my liking. And this Golf Insider is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Test drive the superior performance of a Subaru today. Here's our good buddy Mark Zucchino from Golf Talk Canada.
What do you make of this leaderboard?
I can't stand it.
You don't
like
it?
I'm with you guys. I listen every day to you guys, but I was listening on the way up too.
I mean, we're talking about like 20 under on Sunday.
I can't stand it. I love the majors because of their identity. You know, the Masters, we know Sunday we're getting Eagles and Roars. British Open, we're getting the weather. Home of Golf, we play the game on the ground. U.S. Open's supposed to be, even par's supposed to win this thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I love the identity of that. And, you know, we're on the verge of losing it. We're on record pace. Right now we have 46 players under par. The record for a first round of the U.S. Open is 39. That was in 1990 at Medina. The record for the lead after one round in relation to par is 7 under. Well, we've matched that. Weisskopf and Nicklaus did it in 1980 in Baltusrol. So there's too many relation to par records falling here. I don't like it. I like to see the struggle.
Well, is there anything they can do to the golf course? They're going to watch this and say, we don't like it, but is there anything they can do setup-wise to change it?
You know, I'm wondering about that myself, because normally, obviously, they can pick some weird hole locations and try to trick up some hole locations, which is never popular. But the play from the USGA normally when the score starts getting out of hand is they firm up the golf course, right? They don't touch the water, make the greens like cement, and let the scores come back to par by making the golf course firm and fast. Well, forecast for Friday and Saturday, guys, is tons of rain. So USGA might want that all they want, but they might lose control of that because Mother Nature might take over.
Right.
I thought 600 par was going to win this thing from the beginning anyway, because I just don't believe you can give the best players in the world fairways that are that wide, 50 to 80 yards, and expect even par to win. But now with the moisture coming, we could see double digits win a U.S. Open.
One thing I did notice, some of the real big bombers like John Rahm, DJ, they were hitting it so, the fairways are so wide, but they were just hitting it so far, they were still finding a way to get in trouble, and they were struggling out there a little bit.
Rahm is, that's a mystery.
Jason Day, too.
That's a mystery to me, yeah. They're certainly mysteries to me. Dustin Johnson, I think we could all point to, he's got a lot going on off the golf course. Just welcome to second child. He hasn't put in the preparation. I kind of get where that comes from. The John Rahm, the Jason Day, that makes no sense to me. But there's still some big hitters doing well. Ricky Fowler, Sergio Garcia's back up on the leaderboard. Rory was one under last time I took a peek. So this is far from over, but I'm with you guys in terms of the style of major we have right now. Not my cup of tea for US Open.
What did you get to the bottom of the cutting of the rough? Was it because of the players? Was it the reactions? Like, I can't understand why the USGA would make that decision right before the golf tournament.
I completely agree. I don't buy for a second that the players whining and the attention on social media had nothing to do with this. That could be their public statement. But this is a reaction to what happened 2 years ago at Chambers Bay. 2 years ago at Chambers Bay, it was a PR nightmare with how bad the greens were, how awkward the setup was. They were getting trashed in the media. Last year, they had the kerfuffle with the move golf ball and the videotape and the rules infraction with Dustin Johnson. It's been back-to-back horrible PR years for the USGA, and this was, guys, let's err for safety. Let's play it safe. If we're going to roll the dice, let's put the percentages on our side of that line, right. And this is what you're getting now. You're getting 7 under because
of it, right? Say it gets to 20 under or something on Sunday. Chambers Bay was a disaster, the way the golf course even looked. The greens looked horrible. Garbage. And these guys are experimenting, going to these new golf courses. So if the players are raving about the course after liking the 20 underscore, what's the USGA going to say? Oh, we should go back there in the future? Or are they going to say not a chance in hell?
I hope not. And the problem with this, and I said this week on Golf Talk Canada Television on our preview show, I said I find it very strange that in a three-year window that they're experimenting twice. It's okay to experiment and visit a new venue, but let's give it 5-6 years in between where we go back to classic venues. Now, we're going to get on another one of those stretches starting next year where we hit classic venue after classic venue.
Good.
But why two in every 3 years? Like, we needed 5 years in between Chambers Bay and Erin Hills. But at the end of the day, someone cut a check, guys, and we all know that that usually dictates these things, right?
Mark Sacchino in studio from Golf Talk Canada. Again, U.S. Open opening round still underway, but we're looking at big, big numbers. Ricky Fowler currently in the lead at 7-under. But Brian Harman right there, Tommy Fleetwood, bunch of different guys at 5-under, 4-under, 3-under. Records could be broken here in terms of just putting up really, really low numbers. And I just don't understand, because it does feel like we brought this up earlier in the week when we were talking about the fescue and the players complaining about it. The juxtaposition of players and the reaction of the course when it comes to a U.S. Open and when it comes to the Masters. Like, they wouldn't dare talk smack about Augusta. They don't do it. Now, they love the course. Why wouldn't you love the course? But I'm sure there's times where some players are like, you know what, I don't like this, don't like that. But they dance around it because they're not going to put themselves in a precarious position with Augusta National. Meanwhile, with the U.S. Open, every year they complain. They complain every single year. And I just don't understand. Like, we had Davis Love III on, and he's like, yeah, we want a challenge. Like, what's wrong with one time a year where shooting even par is actually a success? What's wrong with that?
I don't see anything wrong with that. Again, that's the identity of the tournament.
Right.
And with a guy like Rory, you guys must have loved Rory's comments.
I loved it.
Right?
But if you can't hit these fairways, you
pack
shouldn't
your bag
be here.
And go home.
Thank you. Right? And I think a guy who takes that attitude and embraces that attitude is the guy who's going to succeed. I think the players that go in, it's just like any other professional sport, guys. You know, like, positive thoughts produce positive shots. If you got the right attitude in the dressing room, the right message from the coach, you got the right message on the driving range warming up, whatever, the guys that talk themselves into this garbage before it starts, it's over before the ball goes in the ground. And
maybe I should have a more positive attitude. But,
positive attitude.
Take this show to a whole new level, man. Although your negativity and cynicism actually works a lot.
Yeah, it does. It helps the show. It move. It inches it along.
So miserable to begin with the show. I wanted to scratch your eyes out.
Yeah, why did you take issue with me for some reason?
I don't know. I just, sometimes you're like a girlfriend. I just want to scratch your eyes. Like, I just I can't stand you.
It was the Roger Clemens prep talk.
Yeah.
That's what set you off.
That set me off a little bit.
I got to tell you, on the way up, I thought he left the studio. I was listening. I honestly thought he left.
Was that what Noodles and I were
Dumb and Dumber here. I'm not stepping in the middle of that. That's you and him. It was
but we had
having a reasonable conversation.
We had a good
and it's fine if you two do it. It's a three-man show. It doesn't have to be a threesome all the time.
No, I know, but
although that's ideal.
He sat back, which was fine. When him and I are arguing about hypotheticals and where we at. I love that. The only time he interjects is if he disagrees or something. You just were like, I'm letting it go.
I had no problem with mailing that in.
That's
at
fine.
All.
Just he did. It was baby shoot. Monkey. At one point, I thought you were looking to him like, are you going to jump in here or not?
No. But you pulled the chute like that guy in the blimp at the U.S. Open.
What is that?
See that story with the
just
blimp?
Just thing was on fire.
But it was strange to watch the video because it was still going really slow, making its way down to the ground.
I don't know. I wouldn't trust a blimp on any
different
level.
You do not get me in a blimp.
This is an odd choice of travel in today's age. Like, hey, let's take the blimp.
The blimp. Well, my understanding is the guy wasn't affiliated with the tournament.
Nothing.
Just cruising around in a
blimp. In a
blimp
or air balloon. Like, what are you doing?
Driving around, like, ends up over top of the U.S. Open.
What sound system you got in there?
Right? Goes up in flames. The guy jumps out in a parachute.
Entertainment value. That's what I was going to ask you. Is it different for you because no Tiger, no Phil?
You know, not so much because I'm coming, you know, I'm starting to get used to no Tiger.
Right.
I think that's just the way the world. I'm shocked at Phil. I think I'm the only guy on the planet that has been ripping Phil unpopular. I find it to be an unpopular decision. Everybody else patted him on the back for going to a high school graduation. I'm like, buddy, you turn 47 Sunday. The only reason you play this game is to win the U.S. Open so you can join that immortal class of having all four.
Right.
You know, stream the ceremony to your hotel room. This is 2017. You don't have to physically be there to be there. You know,
you have a daughter, Mark?
No, I have a son, though, and I had this conversation with him. And I said, if this ever happened, if you're graduating from university and you're a doctor or a lawyer or a surgeon, I get it. High school, man, I learned Zeppelin IV in high school. That's what I learned, okay? So,
I'm going to play the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open, that's his white whale, right?
That's right.
That's the tournament that has eaten him up, and he's been this close how many times?
6 second-place finishes.
So, is there a part of you, from a psychological standpoint, where he's dodging it? Like, listen, he's got a great reason. His daughter's graduating. Yes. She was speaking, I believe, at the graduation. But this is the tournament that this completes... Yeah. The career slam.
He had a fill line after a U.S. Open. I believe it was at Wingfoot. He's like, yeah, I'm such an idiot.
And let me ask you.
He did have a fill line, and he's Phil.
Well, and I'll ask you guys. He's had 6 second-place finishes. And out of those 6 tournaments, if he had any of the fairways this width,
right,
how many of those 6 would he have won? You know what I mean? Like, this is built right for him, and he's staying home. So, you know what? He's a good dad, I guess. I'm not.
You're
so
right, though, about the age, man. Like, we had Davis Love III on with us yesterday, and he's got a cool experience going on because his son's actually qualified and he's playing in the U.S. Open and Davis is going to be caddying for him. But that comes with the territory. You miss out on a lot of things. And it is kind of interesting that he just chose this one because I'm sure she's had other big moments where he's like, sorry. And it wasn't even, you know, I'm going to play the Colonial or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, I guess you make that call. But there's 4 tournaments a year. When you're talking about a guy of his status, there's 4 tournaments that matter. And the same thing with Tiger. And you're right, it's... I had never heard anyone put it that way, but I think it's probably applicable for all golf fans. You've just become used to him not being there.
And I think
you're not waiting for Tiger to walk through the door.
Unfortunately, and everybody loves a comeback story in every sport, and that would certainly be an epic one, but I just don't see that in the cards. These kids are too young and too good now, too many surgeries, too much baggage and scar tissue now for Tiger.
Do you think the players, well, you probably know this, you're around them, are they goofing on Tiger? Are they protective of Tiger? How do they react to the personal life issues?
I think there's a lot of goofing in private. I think publicly no one would dare say anything or even remotely come close to allowing something that leak because this guy has made them so much money. They are 10 times millionaires over because of that guy, regardless if you like him as a person or not.
Pat Perez went after him a while back.
He said something a little on his show on SiriusXM and then did the backstroke. You know, he said, you know, basically said Tiger's not out here because he can't break 80. And then he did the backstroke, and I'm paraphrasing, but then he did the backstroke by saying, you know, but it's because of surgeries, and it's because of this, and it's because of that. But I think at the end of the day, anybody, they got to be careful, because he's the guy that's put the bread on the table. Like, take a look at those checks when Tiger first came out on tour, and he won in the end of 96 and beginning of 97. He's holding up at those big cardboard wooden checks, the winner's check at 360 grand. Yeah. And now barely holding on to his card is a millionaire. Different world because of Tiger.
Yeah, I totally hear you. But it makes you wonder also how the young kids feel about missed opportunities. Like if you're Jordan Spieth, and Spieth, I think, shot one over today, and ever since he had that great coming out party in 2015, I think it was, he's had some issues with the majors. He didn't take off the way some people were expecting him to take off, where he'd just start loading up on wins. Now, he's still really young, still got a great career ahead of him, and already a great resume. But it makes you wonder if the kids like Spieth are sitting here saying, I wish I had an opportunity to really compete against Tiger when he was at 100%, because he hasn't been at 100% for almost 10 years.
Oh, I completely agree. I think this generation, this crop, is not intimidated by Tiger. They're inspired by Tiger and would have loved that opportunity, but it's just not going to happen. Where the guy, you know, the group of players before this, it was an intimidation factor. And the Spieth thing, Bri, I think he's just never gotten over what happened in 2016 at the Masters on the back nine when he had that in the can and he gagged it in front of the world. And I don't think he's psychologically gotten over that yet. In fact, he hasn't shot under par in the first round of a major since that 2016 Masters. And, you know, that's been quite some time now. So he's still looking for that mental bounce back under the spotlight. But you're right. These kids, they're not afraid of it anymore. They come out with a different attitude. They got a team of people around them. They expect to win. They don't want to ease into their career anymore. But that's all Tiger factor, right?
Right, exactly.
That's what Tiger did. He changed the rules.
We pointed this out previously. We're chatting with Mark Cicchino. But Dustin Johnson, probably the story of the day in terms of what's going on out there outside of the really low scores. But 3 over 75. I mean, if anyone
he had a couple holes where he got it into the hay and he was just chopping it around.
But he was such a huge favorite coming in just because of how well he's been playing for the past 16, 18 months.
And you got to think, this total setup, total DJ golf course, right? It's a big ballpark, big fairways, hit it long, hit it high. But again, just too much going on off the golf course. His mind, regardless of how much he wants to be there, he is elsewhere mentally right now, you know, with a brand new baby at home. And And it's a tough game. You know, Tiger changed how we all think about this. We think, oh, you should go do that. Well, he's the only guy that ever went and did that. That's not the norm. Everybody else, we got to look at the bar a little differently.
Ups and downs. He is Mark Sacchino from Golf Talk Canada. Enjoy the rest of the tournament. Let's hope they toughen things up down there, man.
Let's hope Mother Nature gives us some win, guys, so we have something, some tough golf to watch on the weekend.
Yeah,
if
humanize.
The fans get turned on, we might have something to watch.
That's I want what the I'm blimp guy to come in.
And blimp guy.
He's the highlight of round one for me.
Yeah,
thanks, guys.
He's the dart guy of the golf
exactly.
tour. Thanks, Mark. There he is, Mark Sacchino from Golf Talk Canada. Bobby Mack coming up on the big deal in Montreal. Jonathan Drouin from Tampa to the Habs. We'll get his take on that next. Overdrive continues. Bob McKenzie will join us here in just a moment. We had a big guest join us earlier in the afternoon on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are now on with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca. That big guest factors in to our big giveaway.
Oh, yeah?
This Father's Day, don't forget to give the old man what he really wants, and that, of course, would be pizza. I happen to be getting pizza from this very spot tonight. I'm really looking
really?
Forward to it.
My kid made me a donut at school, or they had donuts or whatever, and she ate it on the way home for my Father's Day gift.
Well, she was hungry. Did she let you know about it? Say, like, I ate the donut?
She asked permission. I said, yeah.
That's a champ, man. I like that move.
That is a veteran move.
I got no problem with that move.
No.
Win your dad a $100 two-for-one pizza gift card every day this week on Overdrive. Details up on tsn1050.ca. Phone lines are open, 416-870-1050. Father-son duos. There was a son drafted by the Blue Jays this week.
Yes.
His dad joined us earlier in the hour. Who is that father-son duo? 416-870-1050. The first one in with that answer picks up a $100 gift card, courtesy of pizza, or two-for-one pizza. Bobby Mack will join us here in a moment. Big news in the NHL today. Jonathan Drouin traded to Montreal in exchange for Mikhail Sergachev.
Sergachev.
I think we clarified it's Sergachev. We'll go with Sergachev. And Drouin's already worked out a new long-term deal in Montreal. 6 years, $5.5 million per.
That's the, like you said earlier, like that deal doesn't get done in 4 minutes. It's like this, the sign-in trade or the trade-in sign. That one's done. So you always think there's back-channeling. We're the last to know.
There's back-channeling. And
absolutely.
Listen, if I'm Montreal and Mark Bergevin, I'm not making the deal unless I know I can sign him long-term
absolutely.
And what the money's going to be.
Absolutely.
He's an RFA, so he needs a new contract. But O brings up a really good point, like the P.K. Subban comparison.
Yeah.
P.K., they had drafted him, they developed him, they knew who he was, what he was, and they made him take a bridge deal.
After a Norris.
They made him go to arbitration and hear how awful he was, and they gave him a bridge deal. Now they acquire an RFA who's never played for the team, and he gets a six-year, $33 million deal.
Very interesting.
Well, that's the way it works sometimes. The Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. Here's Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. Give us your reaction to the trade, Bob.
Very interesting. Not surprised at all that Drouin was traded. Not surprised that he was traded to Montreal. Maybe a little surprised that Sergachev was the return, but if it was going to be Montreal, it had to be Sergachev because Steve Yzerman was basically on record as saying he's got to get a young defenseman that fits their profile, and Sergachev does that. I've been beating the drum for 3 months that Drouin's the guy that's getting traded because Tyler Johnson wasn't going to get them Sergachev or another defenseman of that caliber. And he had financial issues, Yzerman did, in Tampa, and they couldn't afford to sign Drouin, Johnson, and Palat. And, you know, Kucherov's on a bridge deal there. It's a three-year deal. He's got 1 year down, two to go. But he's going to be a $7, $8 million player easy when he comes out of his deal. So it was pretty obvious to me that Drouin was going to be the guy that was going to get traded, and he did, and Montreal got him. And that only reinforces to me that there's more to be done in Montreal. I'll be really surprised if Galchenyuk's not traded here in the next little while.
Yeah, that's where I was heading, Bob. You've been very active on Twitter, again, and laying things out. We were talking earlier, Jonathan Drouin certainly adds to the
I guess, the skill level of the Montreal Canadiens, but it doesn't really address the need, which is down the middle and on the back end. So do you believe that Marc Bergevin will be very proactive in trying to address some of their needs?
Yeah, I would think so. You're right. I mean, you know, conceivably, could they keep Galchenyuk and Drouin on the lineup? They could. But, you know, Galchenyuk's up for a deal, too. And he's not going to get Drouin money, but he's going to be looking for a, healthy number. And, you know, he could get bridged again. He was coming off a bridge. But I think, you know, he's only 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. So, you know, if you're going to sign him, you're going to sign him for longer than 2 years because you don't want to walk him to free agency and then lose him for nothing. So my guess is that Galchenyuk will get traded, and they do need to address specific position needs. They don't really have any. I'll be curious to see if they try to get Drouin to play center. I don't know if that's a pipe dream or whether he could do it. He might be able to do it. He's got all the skills, maybe not without the puck necessarily, but he's a talent. So I'll be curious to see if they try that. Even if they don't, I still think Galchenyuk could be sacrificed to get themselves a defenseman. Jonas Brodin in Minnesota is a guy that's eminently available right now. I believe Minnesota is likely to trade him before the freeze on Saturday at 3 o'clock. And Montreal's by no means the only team in on Jonas Brodin. But that's the type of defenseman Montreal's obviously looking for. And so if you could replace Galchenyuk in the lineup with Drouin, and then you could replace, you know, and bring Brodin into the picture. Maybe a little bit of blue skying going on there, because as I say, there's other teams that are in there. But if you get a defenseman of that caliber, you're Marc Bergevin, you're much further ahead than you were.
With Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, you mentioned the trade freeze on Saturday at 3 p.m. That's when Vegas effectively holds all the cards, and they'll have exclusivity over doing anything league-wide, signing players, making deals, all that kind of stuff. So what's your sense from the 30 other GMs in terms of getting things done before that deadline? How hectic is it right now?
I think it's crazy right now. I think there's all sorts of talk going on for, as I say, a team like Minnesota. They want to trade a defenseman between now and the 3 p.m. deadline. There are other teams that are looking to do similar type things. As you point out, you got the freeze at 3 o'clock on Saturday, and then starting at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, teams can deal again, but only with Vegas. And that lasts all the way through till next Thursday, a week today, at 8 a.m. Eastern time. So, you know, all the other activity ceases outside of whatever Vegas might do. So I'm sure there's plenty of action going on in plenty of spots right now all across the league. Some of these teams have deals cut with Vegas already. Some of them still want to try to make them. But I think a lot of teams are talking to each other outside of the Vegas situation and trying to make something happen.
You mentioned Minnesota and defensemen. Is there any rumblings of Toronto sniffing around on any of their D-men?
Well, I don't know if necessarily with Minnesota, but I'm sure Toronto's sniffing around on D-men. I heard a rumor, and I really want to stress the difference between a rumor and when I come on and talk about something that it might be substantial. I've not been able to confirm or deny or get any information. It was just a rumor out there. But Mark Pesek in Florida is a guy who some people think that might be available because of the expansion draft. You know, if Florida goes 3-7, everybody's already talking that Jason Demers is likely to be exposed in Florida. But with Ekblad and the fact that Keith Yandel's got a no-move clause and he's not waiving it, there's two guys that you have to protect. Then you've got Pesek and Petrovic, two relatively young defensemen. One of them's got to be exposed. Probably in addition to Jason Demers. So if you're Florida, do you trade one of those guys? And there's lots of speculation, but nothing firm by any stretch that maybe they would. Well, you know, Pesek's a name that, as I say, I've heard that the Leafs may have interest in, but that's, as I say, I want to really stress that it's a rumor as opposed to anything substantial.
Well, the Leafs are in I think, a great spot because they're not really concerned about who they're exposing. They're not going to lose anyone of significance. And by all accounts, they've got cap room, and we know that they've got deep pockets, so they can eat money if need be. And they got Lou in town who somehow makes guys just go away if he has to. Yet there's, you know, depending on what you're reading, what you're hearing, no one quite has a read on whether or not they're going big game hunting or if they're okay with just kind of supplementing what they have. And by that I mean, you know, make a big deal for a Sammy Vatanen or a Brodin, or do you get the impression like they'd be okay a month from now having just signed like a Girardi on a one-year deal, and that's your third pairing guy, and we just move forward with what we have here?
Yeah, I think they're open to anything and everything, and I think they'll inquire into significant stuff if it's there. But by the way, I think, you know, if they were to get a Brodin or a Vatanen, that's a significant move. Those guys are top four defensemen.
Right.
They're making $4 million or more bucks, or in that $4 million range, which is the sort of the signature of a top four defenseman in the National Hockey League. So that would be a notable transaction were they to do that. So I don't have any specific knowledge that the Leafs are in on this particular guy or that particular guy. But I've got to believe that, you know, if they believe that's a defenseman that suits their purposes, they're going to be all over it. They're dealing from a position of strength, two positions of strength, really. Number one, they've got a lot of guys. I mean, if they want to use players like Connor Brown or elements like that, they've got some guys that have a little bit of a sizzle and jam in terms of the trade market that might be used in those types of situations. And the other, the secondary thing they've got in their favor is they're not absolutely required to do something. You know, this is not life and death. If we don't come out with another top four defenseman this year, next year is going to be disaster. All it means is they're coming back with Riley and Zaitsev and Gardner and maybe Dermott and maybe one of those two Swedish kids they signed. See what else, Carrick and whatever else is kicking around out there. But whether it's Brodin or whether it's Vatanen or whether it's Pesek or whatever relatively young defensemen that don't have a huge cap number, I'm sure the Leafs are checking out all the possibilities.
With Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider, another big name that always seems to be on the rumor mill, has been the past couple of years, continues to be today, is Jordan Eberle out of Edmonton. They got a bunch of players to protect, a bunch of obvious ones that you know they will. What's your sense on how Chiarelli and the Oilers are going to approach Eberle this offseason?
Well, I think he's going to get traded. Now, not 100% guaranteed, but if you're asking me if he's going to get traded, I would say it's much more likely than not that Jordan Eberle gets traded. And I would say it's more likely than not that the trade happens before the freeze on Saturday, for obvious reasons, protection issues, whatever the case may be. But in any case, it's interesting because you get all sorts of people who say, that Jordan Eberle's being made a scapegoat for a bad playoff and that he's been a pretty good player for them over the years, and I think he has. But I also think that the Oil recognize that at some point in time, even if it's not now, it's probably a year from now, they desperately need, they can't afford to pay Jordan Eberle $6 million is what it really boils down to, and that's what they're paying him. Now, they can't afford it right now. So if they wanted to wait a year, they could. But I think they recognize that there is, even in spite of a bad playoff, there's significant interest in Jordan Eberle, and I think they want to turn the page, and I think they want to bring in a different asset, and they want to use those dollars elsewhere. They've got to do the McDavid deal. They've got to do the Dreisaitl deal, but McDavid deal doesn't kick in for another year anyways. So as I said, they do have the luxury. If they absolutely hated what was on the table for Jordan Eberle, then they don't have to do a deal. But my understanding of the situation is they got plenty of offers on the table right now and enough that they look at and say, realistically, yeah, we could do some of these, or we're very close that something could be done here. So why wait? So that's my sense of it. And as I say, it's not 100% guaranteed Eberle will be traded. by no means is it 100% guaranteed that Eberle will be traded, period. It's not 100% guaranteed that he'll be traded by Saturday, but I'd be the least surprised guy in the world if he was.
What the hell's that McDavid deal going to look like?
I don't know. You know what I'm interested? Before we get to McDavid, I want to know what the Carey Price deal is going to look like. That's what I'm really curious. I'm really, really curious. Because I don't have it in front of me here, but I want to say that Pekka Rinne, is he the highest paid goaltender in the league?
No, I think Lundqvist is.
Lundqvist, yeah. So what is he, what, 7, 7, 5?
No, I think Lundqvist is over 8.
Okay, yeah,
I got it right here.
And I think Price would be over...
Is that AAV?
His cap it is 8.5.
8.5. Okay, so you know that's the... You know that Carey's getting more than 8.5.
Absolutely.
Because that deal is how many years old? 5 years old? 4 years old?
It's a couple years anyway.
Yeah, at least a couple. So anyways, it's an older deal. So at 8.5, even though the cap hasn't gone up crazy since then, you know that... In his mind, he's saying, okay, well, I got to be 9 or 9.5 or 10. But what I'm wondering is, what if it's 11 or 12? You know, because what's Montreal going to say? Ah, no.
They got to write him a bank. They got to hand him a blank check and say, fill it out.
They are going to, and Price has got to know the higher he writes that number in, the harder it is to build a team around him.
No kidding.
They're trying to sign Radulov. You know, now they've got... You know, they've got the Drouin deal. Drouin's a bargain, by the way, in my mind, at 5.5. I thought for sure he'd come in at 6x6.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think he's an elite offensive player. And, I mean, you look at all those guys. Again, some of these deals don't stand the test of time because they're done 4, 5, 6 years ago. But, you know, Tavares, 5.75 when he came out of entry level. You know, Skinner. 5.5 or 5.75. And then Edmonton, all those guys, Hall, Eberle, Nugent Hopkins, they all got 6x6.
Right.
Yeah.
That was sort of, for anybody in your organization that was considered sort of a foundational offensive player, and it's funny how things change because we're talking about Eberle being traded now, and part of the reason he's being traded is because he hasn't lived up to that $6 million a year. You know, I think that was a bogey on the part of the Edmonton Oilers. I don't think that's a bogey on the part of the Montreal Canadiens. But if they'd gone 6x6, I wouldn't have batted an eyelash because that's the going rate for foundational offensive players coming out of entry level. Now, you can debate, is Drouin a foundational offensive player coming out of entry level, or is he something less than that? I think he's pretty spectacular myself.
Well, it also bring it back to Toronto. What's going to go on a year from now in the summertime? They're going to have some interesting...
Well, I was going to mention quickly while we're on that, because you're talking about the Leafs, Nylander, they can work a deal out with him this summer, can they not, Bob? He's an RFA after next year.
So technically they could do a deal...
As of July 1, I would assume.
July 1. And it's interesting because when, so he's still on entry level. So what the pros and cons of doing a deal when you got a year left is if he has a really good third year, what they call the platform year, especially in concert with what he did this year, you're screwed. Like now he's not doing a bridge deal and he's not doing a lower end.
No, he's going to want more than the Drouin deal.
He's going to want way more than the Drouin deal. And that now, if by chance he has a bad platform year, which is the third year of your entry level, and it's a whole different ballgame. You know, he still expects to be paid, but he doesn't, you know, he can't hit it out of the park. And that's, you know, that's then where you have to end up taking something at less than, in and around Drouin or less.
Well, it's an interesting gamble on both sides, isn't it? Because Leafs are thinking, okay, do we talk to him now and try to get a few years at lesser money, and bank on him continuing to grow, or let him play it out? Maybe he steps back a bit, which won't benefit them in terms of this upcoming season. I can't imagine they would want that to happen to a player. But then maybe you get him a bit cheaper. But if you're Nylander, I mean, you guys can speak to this as a player. Do you gamble in your own ability and say, no, I'll wait another year and I'll really make you pay? Or do you take some security and take some cash after 1 year?
Yeah, I don't know. The players would know better than me. But if I were the Leafs, I'd probably be looking at trying to do you know, 6x6 type deal for a guy like Nylander right away. And, you know, because there's no reason to believe he's not going to build on what he did this season, really.
Yeah, you don't want him to rip home 35 next year, and then it's like, all right.
Yeah, then it's like, you know, and that's part of what Edmonton's dealing with, Draisaitl right now.
Yeah.
You know, Draisaitl, especially coming off the playoff he had, my goodness. Well, you know, that's a hell of a platform year for him. His deal's up. You know, if a year ago, if they went to Draisaitl and said, hey, we'll give you the 6x6, he probably grabs it and everybody's happy. And now McDavid and him almost have to get their deals done simultaneously, because if I'm McDavid and so I'm saying, okay, I'm going to take a hometown discount because I want to build a team around me. I don't want to take 13 or 14 million, which I could probably command. But I don't want to do that because I know that I got to take a hometown discount in a cap world to make sure that they're able to sign all the players we want to sign so we can win a cup. That's what Crosby did. That's what Malkin did. That's what these guys do.
Yeah.
And that, but if he sits there and says, yeah, so he takes his hometown discount and say he does it for 10-5 or 10, the same money that Kane and Taves are making, and then the next guy up to bat is Draisaitl, and Draisaitl comes in and doesn't take a hometown discount, and suddenly the money that McDavid chose not to take just went into Dreisaitl's pocket. So if you're one or the other, you kind of want to know what the other guy's doing and where it's at. So it's kind of a funny dynamic.
Well, it's so true. And I mean, what we just said about Price, how he can ask for whatever he wants and the Habs are going to have to give it to him. Right. Same thing as like McDavid and Edmonton. If he walks in and says, I want the max,
yeah,
you can't. I mean, I understand he's an RFA, so he's in a different situation, but they're not going to mess around with him.
No, and you know what? In fairness, the long since departed executive director of the NHLPA, Bob Goodenow, he said, "You guys don't want a salary cap because what a salary cap will do is it will turn player against player. You guys will have to cannibalize each other," and that part of it's absolutely true. It's absolutely 100% true that, you know, if Carey Price wants his true market value, then he's got to say he's got to get it, knowing that Montreal can't sign Alex Radulov. So I'm going to be a goalie for a team that's going to lose one of their best offensive players because I want the money that I'm owed. And so you end up having to take less if you want to build that team around you. And it's the same, you know, it's the same dynamic with Crosby and Malkin, and it'll be the same dynamic to varying degrees with McDavid and Price and those other players in a franchise where, as you say, the rare player who can just say, give me the check and I'll fill in the number for you.
I would have signed up for cannibalizing each other as opposed to missing a year and losing $3.5 million.
Yeah, we all.
That's what you call a loser move.
Loser's race.
The loser's race. $3.5 million on the table.
Yeah.
Up in smoke.
In the toilet.
Loser's race.
Yeah.
All right, Bob.
I could think of probably $3.5 million you've also spent.
$250,000 of it anyway.
Yeah, in other areas that went basically up in smoke.
Yeah. The rest of it was just on nonsense.
Yeah.
All right, Bob. The famous Derek Sanderson line? I think it was Sanderson.
Yeah, he said, I spent $1 million on booze and drugs. The rest of it was just on nonsense.
I just wasted.
His story, man. You're lucky you didn't go down that path, man.
That book was
down by the river.
Derek's, he was actually
down by the river.
Yeah, he was Matt Foley.
I got a real job now.
Yeah. All right, Bob. Good stuff, man. We'll do it again soon. It should be a fun 48 hours.
All right, boys. Thanks a lot.
Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, brought to you by Finance and Monthly Payment Plans for Big Dreams and Everyday Budgets. We'll get back into that tomorrow.
I wanted you to jump down Bob's throat the way that you attacked me. It's like, yeah, Drouin's an elite. I saw you bite your lip, and I was he's not going to attack Bob.
You went 25
Bob.
Under
I never said
at
he
the no balls
open. I never said he wasn't an elite.
No balls open.
I'm teasing.
The U.S. Opens on TV. The no balls opens at the desk.
Couple things
on this. You just won yourself a trophy.
No.
I'm teasing you.
I know you are. Couple things on that. I never said he wasn't elite.
No, I know.
Jonathan Drouin is elite. I'm saying I don't love the trade because of what... Bob never said one thing or the other about if the trade made sense
overall.
He said he loves Drouin as a player. I don't disagree. disagree with that.
I just, I thought somebody was going to chime in.
Also, we've been talking so much about it. I was more interested in him saying he truly believes Eberle's getting dealt.
And
Galchenyuk is getting dealt.
These are some names thrown around. Like, that's...
Big time.
Some good young players.
Very good players. And we'll get into the Nylander conversation, though. Like, if you're the Leafs, would you lock him up now?
Yeah,
after would you try to cut down the money in the term a bit or
maybe
let him?
Maybe after the break we'll play a little Wiggy Non-Gi.
All right, we'll do that next. Don't forget, O-Dog Noodles and I are gearing up for the Scotiabank Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer Tournament September 23rd at Woodbine. Visit tsn1050.ca to make a donation on behalf of Team Overdrive. For every $20, you'll be entered to win roster spots on the team for you and a friend. All proceeds going to the Princess Margaret Cancer Center. Quickly, time now for our best bets brought to you by Proline. I'm on Boston Road Plus with Chris Sale on the mound in Philly tonight. Over the number, Washington in New York taking on the Mets, and I'll take the Yankees out on the West Coast at the Athletics. Throw down 20, you can win 77. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Proline, get way into the game.
Let's hear Phil Mickelson do his best Phil Kessel after losing the U.S. Open.
I'm such an idiot.
That was his interview.
I am such an idiot.
You should have it side by side with Phil's.
You're such an idiot.
Yeah.
This guy's such an idiot here.
It's pretty close.
All right, let's hear Phil Mickelson one more time.
I am such an idiot.
And now Kessel.
This guy's such an idiot here.
Phil's
There's
a big
something
golf
with
fan.
Phil's and
dueling idiots.
There is something about that.
I like it.
All right, you guys ready quickly for the three stars?
Yeah.
Overdrive, three stars of the day.
Third star, Steph and Rocket Roger.
Yeah, that was a good get.
Steph has been on fire this week.
What?
She's been great this week.
But she bailed out.
Her and Al combined to be a disaster.
That one day.
Yeah.
That was a zero. That was an anti-star, and it wasn't Al's fault. It was Steph's.
Yeah, Al was good. Steph, meh.
Yeah, exactly. Non-gi.
You got anybody quickly?
I'm going to give you a star.
You think
I think
so?
We had a spirited debate about
a great debate.
Drouin and the superstars of the Leafs.
Yes.
Mitch Marner, Nylander,
and Matthews. And I'll give it to Mike Sergachev. Mike.
And how about
and Zucchino came in here and
Mark
rocked
Zucchino
it big time.
Yeah, big fan.
All right, we're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.